For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Support for this podcast is provided by Subchuck Law. Revolution Recap thanks Subchuck Law for their support of our show, local independent media, and their mission of bringing unbiased truth. Revolution Recap would also like to thank Six Point Builders for their support. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap. The Revs restarted their MLS season in a dull and disappointing fashion with a 1-0 loss to CF Montreal. The loss capped off an eventful week, which saw goalkeeper Jorge Petrovic officially sign with Chelsea. I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me today, fresh off of a road trip to Montreal north of the border, it is Sam Minton of the Blazing Musket. Sam, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Always nice to get to do some traveling and spend 5 hours in Montreal, all covering a Revs game. It was nice to see the Stade Saputo and, Czech Stadium off the old checklist. But it was not the greatest of games. And obviously seeing the Revolution not be able to get 3 points is quite disappointing. But otherwise, always happy to be on a Revolution Recap.
And of course, it's always good to have you on, although it is a pretty miserable week, and we will get into all of the news of the week. I think we're going to start with the news because I think you and I both don't really want to talk about this game. This game is terrible from a neutral standpoint, and even worse from a Revolution standpoint. So we're going to cover the news first and then go to the game. But before we do that, I want to tell you about our sponsors, BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more, including Major League Soccer. And just looking ahead to Wednesday's game against the Red Bulls, the Revs open as plus 100 favorites in that game. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Sam, biggest news of the week, and we talked about it a few weeks ago, Jorge Petrovic. Some bids started coming in for Jorge Petrovic, and the last time I was on, by the way, Sam, I got to preface this. Last time I was on, I took some heat because I said there's about a 50-50 chance Petrovic might not ever play for the Revs again. And I think 2 days after that podcast came out, he played for the Revs. So I took some heat, but I just want to let everyone know I was only off by one game. Everyone started dunking on me. I was off by one game. Petrovic came back, played the final League's Cup game, and that will be his final Revolution game as the move is now official. Sam, what is your thoughts about this move? And by the way, I should also add in some of the details. Chelsea purchased him for $17.4 million with $2.1 million in add-ons. So it's a little bit more than the $8 or $9 million in base that we were talking about from Nottingham Forest a few weeks ago. Sam, what's your reaction to the Petrovic sale?
Yeah, I definitely understand that fans are probably upset to see the greatest goalkeeper in MLS leave the club, and it definitely takes a hit to the club's aspirations, whether it be, an MLS Cup or a Supporters Shield. But I think it was just a deal that you couldn't refuse. You couldn't turn it down. Obviously, the price, he's now, I believe, the most expensive goalkeeper transfer. And I believe he's in the top five in terms of MLS outgoing transfers. I saw something his agent put out. I think he's now the most expensive Serbian transfer. So it just seems like a move you couldn't reject, and it was really a perfect storm for it with, Kepa being loaned out, and there just kind of being an opening with Gago Slonina also being out on loan. So it seemed like Chelsea was in a position where they were going to overpay, and they have overpaid for plenty of players, and the Revolution had to say yes to it. You couldn't refuse it. You couldn't wait till January. I don't think you would get an offer from a Chelsea in January. I think they would have already picked someone up and they would have gone with it, and Gagliardini would be back on loan for the next season, which is already crazy to think about, seeing that the EPL just started up. But yeah, overall, it sucks to see him go, but it seems like financial wise, it's definitely a good move for the Revs, but it takes a hit to what they're capable of doing this upcoming season.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I just want to clarify one thing you said. You said it, you said it correctly, but I just want to clarify, it's the most expensive goalkeeper transfer outgoing in for MLS.
Yes.
And it's a also a top five outgoing transfer in MLS history. Compared to the last time I was on, when I made a pretty impassioned plea that the Revs need to hold Petrovic, and Petrovic sitting out for an $8 million transfer bid is childish, and you know all those things kind of still hold true. The $8 million bid from Nottingham Forest was low. I said in the previous podcast, I had it around a $10 to $12 million base, and that apparently also was very low. You know, you look at Slonina, who you've mentioned a couple times, he had a $10 million base with a $5 million add-on. I think that is a good guideline for what Petrovic's sale price was. He's a little older, but he's also a little more polished. So I think $10 to $12 million base was his market value. Matt Turner just sold for $10 million to Nottingham Forest. He is older, and Petrovic is better than Matt Turner, in my opinion. So I think $10 million, honestly, might be low. So $8 million, Petrovic holding out over, you know, over the bid. And I know it came out that he said, you know, they said the team was working with him. He only did individual, you know, the team sounded a little more on the same page with him after that whole thing ended. Okay. Either way, I think it was a bad look because the Revs knew bigger offers were coming. Nottingham Forest was not going to have the biggest offer for Petrovic. I think a lot of people said, I don't know if it was in response to me, but some people said, you know, Nottingham Forest is an EPL club. Petrovic could go start for an EPL club. You got to sell him, you know, and there were bigger fish interested in Petrovic. And I think everyone knew that. The Revs certainly knew that. As I mentioned last podcast, the Revs had all the leverage in the world to hold out for more, to get his market value and more than his market value. You know, if you own your house and someone shows up in your front door and offers to buy your house at market value, it might be an inconvenient time for you to sell. Your kids might be in school. You don't have another house lined up. So it needs to be a sweeping offer to get you out of the house. If someone offers you double the value of your house, you know, maybe you're moving Susie to private school and you're living, you know, you're renting a condo for the rest of the year. So this is a scenario where the Revs, things changed because Chelsea came in and made that offer they could not refuse. $17.4 million is a ton of money. And an $8 million bid or a $10 million bid was probably going to be waiting for them for Petrovic in the winter. But $17.4 million plus $2.1 million in add-ons, probably not. That seems like as much as you can get. And there was also the episode of Extra Time this week. Tom Bogart brought up a very interesting point where he said, you know, $8 million, you know, well, I said this last time on Revolution Recap, where, you know, your teammates are probably pissed you're holding out over an opening bid. But, you know, if they are keeping you here over a $17 million bid to Chelsea, I think a lot of your teammates are going to turn your head and wonder, you know, if the organization has the interest in the players, right? So there is kind of a give and take where, you know, how you handle an undermarket bid over an overmarket bid is different. And so I think the team handled this very well and handled the negotiations very well and got top, top dollar. And by the way, I also want to say Tom Bogart said on Extra Time that Manchester United has scouted every single Revs game this year. So someone was coming for Jorge Petrovic, and it was going to be a lot of money. And you're right, Sam, Chelsea bit, and they paid top, top dollar for Petrovic. And this is a major win for Petrovic. This is a major win for the New England Revolution. I think this sucks for the fans. And we can get into that a little bit. But, you know, I think there was the stat that the Revs are, what was it, like the fourth highest net transfer. They have the fourth highest net transfer since 2021 outside of the Big Five leagues or something like that. Did you see that stat?
I did not, but if that is true, that is quite insane.
They are one of the most profitable teams in terms of net transfers in the world right now because they have you know, about $40 million between Tejan, Turner, Buxa, and Petrovic. And you know, the MLS rules are very restrictive, and I discussed this in the salary cap episode a few months ago, but until a designated player spot opens or a U22 spot opens, you can't buy someone with an unlimited transfer fee. So they have a very, very large amount of money. They're still trying to spend the money from the other three transfers, and I think a lot of fans are tired of seeing these really talented players leave. And in the case of Tejan, he stayed through the end of the season. Buxa and Turner stayed through Champions League. And the Revs held off on letting them leave until the summer. But in this case, it's mid-season, and I think this is a really, really tough pill to swallow. And if you're a fan that's spending a lot of money on going to games and buying jerseys and having an emotional investment into this game, into this team, losing Petrovic at this stage, losing the goalkeeper with the all-time highest save percentage in MLS at 76.8%, minimum 150 career saves, this really sucks. So win for the team, win for Petrovic. I think that situation was handled very, very well, and I understand why this works out on a business side of things. But I think if you're a fan and all these things and injuries and Bruce Arena situation and all this is happening and now you're losing Petrovic, this is a really, really tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, but I do think, especially for Petrovic, compared to someone like Turner going to Arsenal, I think Petrovic can definitely compete for the starting job this season. I definitely think he can beat out Sanchez if he gets the opportunity to. Kevin Hitchcock believes it, and I'm not going to doubt Kevin Hitchcock. So it will be really interesting to see how it plays out, and it would be quite wild to see someone who was playing for the Revolution, you know, months ago, being the starting goalkeeper for, you know, a top club in England. So definitely best of luck to Jorge. Pick number 28. Don't exactly know how I feel about that. But overall, you know, definitely a great move for him. But it does, you know, suck, you know, for the fans who show up through thick and thin to see another top player going. And you can't really bring in a lot of reinforcements. Obviously, you know, the Revolution did with, you know, kind of the roster rules, you're able to bringing in a free agent, but it's going to be a tough, you know, hole to replace in the, you know, in the net. But it will be interesting to see how the rest of the season goes. But definitely, it's a great move for Petrovic, and business wise, you definitely can't turn away that money.
And I just want to correct something you said. You said Chelsea is a top team in the Premier League. That is categorically false. They're a rich team.
Historically, my apologies.
It is a perfect storm where you have a team that is spending an insane amount of money, but quality-wise, they are not doing very well. And it's kind of the perfect storm of Petro could start there right now, and also they have very deep pockets. Whereas a Man U or an Arsenal or Man City or, you know, whoever at the top of the table, Petrovic is probably going to be slotted in as the backup. So this is really the best case scenario, I think, for Petrovic, where it's the biggest club. He gets a 7-year contract from Chelsea. And you're right. If they turn things around, he's suddenly with an English giant, as opposed to Matt Turner, who's going to be fighting relegation with Nottingham Forest. So a couple of things, too, before we get going. And, you know, we've touched on the MLS rules, and some people have kind of talked to me privately about this. You know, Petrovic is not a designated player, so they can convert $1.16 million of this fee into GAM. And if you listen to my salary episode from a few months ago, which I highly recommend, the easiest way to think of how much money you can spend is the salary cap plus GAM plus TAM, and that's around $9.8 million this season. And obviously, if you're a designated player, you have a set number going against that cap. If you're a U22 player, you have a set number going against that cap. So their salaries are don't really matter in this case. But long story short, that 1.16 converted to GAM, that expands that $9.8 million up to, you know, about $11 million. So you're expanding your cap rate, your salary cap, 10 to 12%. So it will benefit a little bit, but $17 million plus another two potentially, you know, there's a really, really big chunk there that, you know, you really, in terms of on the field performance, you know, you're waiting for a DP spot to open or a U22 spot to open. And if Sean Clay is the guy there, if they exercise that purchase option and it's disputed whether or not he's a designated player, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Revs spend that money. Maybe a fourth designated player is coming. And one thing I wouldn't be shocked, Sam, is Carlos Gil has a team option at the end of this year, and then his contract's done. He's currently making a $3.25 million base salary, total compensation $3.55 million. I wouldn't be shocked if Carlos Gil and the Revs talk extension, or they tack on a year onto that contract, maybe another team option onto that contract, and they give him a bit of a raise to keep him in New England, because they're kind of tied on what they can do right now with that money.
You know, there's also the question of Gustavo Bowe. We'll probably get to it later, but his future of the squad as well. And even if you do keep all the DPs you have now, like you mentioned, you know, there's a possibility that Tronchet becomes a DP. So it's definitely an interesting time to see how the Revolution, you know, handle these lovely MLS roster rules.
It's probably a question for another day. And maybe they're adding another designated player, and maybe the Revs are able to make a big splash there. And it should be noted that MLS rules, I didn't double check that if this is still the case, but it used to say that any fee that comes in, you have to spend that money on the team. Spending that money on the team doesn't mean you're increasing spending on that team by that amount. Just want to say that. You know, in theory, that money is going back to the team in some way. It's just, I feel like with the Revs, it's more operational instead of performance. But anyway, you alluded to this earlier, that the Revs, the MLS transfer window has closed. So the Revs are only able to sign free agents at this point. So their hands are a little bit tied with the Georgi Petrovic signing, but they found their new goalkeeper. It's Tomas Vatslik. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Everyone who listens to this podcast know I cannot pronounce names or team names or anything correctly, but it's Tomas Vatslik, I believe. He is currently unattached, so this is well within the rules for the Revs to sign. Former teams include Olympiacos, Sevilla, and most recently Huddersfield Town. He has over 50 caps with the Czech Republic national team. He has played in Europa League and Champions League. He also won Europa League in the 2019-2020 season with Sevilla. He helped save Huddersfield Town from relegation last year. He kind of came in as a mercenary and helped them fight off relegation. And you can read more at the Blazing Musket about a scouting report from a reporter who covered Huddersfield Town from relegation last year. He covers them currently too. Vatslik signed a deal through 2024 with a 2025 team option. And by the way, I looked it up, Sam. Vatslik, he has had Messi score a hat trick on him. So great news for the Revolution season ticket reps. That is going to be a major selling point for season tickets in the future. So I did look it up. Even more of a 100% chance Messi is scoring at Gillette Stadium next year on Tomas Vatslik. Sam, when you're done laughing at that, because I didn't tell you that was coming, I guess I'll give my take on it first.
No, I got you, Greg. I got you one better, actually. Your co-host, Sean Donahue, did some research, because I know, you know, we had the Petrovos, we had the Matt Turner train. Now we have the Vatslik vlog. Because according to your co-host on Google Translate, Vlok translates to train. So the Vatslik Vlok is coming to New England, and he is not messing around. Just regarding the move, I definitely think it's good to see some of that experience, especially your Europa League experience. And it is interesting to have kind of that relegation battle experience, because obviously there's a lot of talk about the pressures of playing in MLS compared to relegation. I'm reminded of Gareth Bale's comments. So to have someone who has been through that experience, I think, is valuable, but obviously is a little bit older, especially compared to, you know, the likes of Turner and Petrovic. So it was quite interesting to see how long the deal could go. Basically, you're almost looking at an 18-month window to see what you really have, and maybe it's sending it out longer. But because I personally thought it might just be sort of like a stopgap for this season and wait to see, you know, what you have in terms of someone like Jacob Zaxton. Definitely think a guy like Max Weinstein still far off from, you know, competing for first team minutes. But it definitely seemed like an opportunity for someone like Jacob Zaxton to potentially get minutes. But with, you know, Vatslik, and you also have Earl Edwards Jr. signing an extension, or contract extension as well, or renewal. It looks like those are going to be your goalkeeper tandems for the at least near future, but definitely a wealth of experience, and you know, should be able to provide some stability in the back of the net.
And I think with the situation the Revs are in, this is about as good as they could have done. I think with the way things are going with the Revs right now, obviously there's a lot of injuries. It's, you know, we'll talk about the Bruce situation a little bit, not that there's any information on that, but it's a bit of a tough situation right now. And you have a guy that came into a very tough situation in Huddersfield Town last year, and they had to fight off relegation in the championship. And he was a major component turning them around. And he performed very well for them. And 34 years old, obviously that's he's not going to be sold to a Premier League team in the near future, so we don't have to worry about that. But it is a little bit different than the model of bringing in young players, coaching them up, and selling them on and recycling and doing that cycle. I think this is a really, really good signing for the Revs. I think that you need a veteran right now who can come in and do a really, really solid job. Earl Edwards Jr., I think, is a fine backup. I don't really trust him 100% throughout down the stretch. And Jacob Jackson has yet to make his MLS debut. So they had to bring in someone, and you're very, very limited because most goalkeepers at this stage have a team. So I think, all things considered, this is about as good as they could have done. And this is a guy that 3-4 years ago is playing for Sevilla, who is finishing, you know, fourth, fifth in La Liga and won Europa League. So he's played in big games. The resume is there. You're right, though. He's 34. I know goalies can go a lot longer than field players, so that doesn't scare me as much. But obviously, he's a little bit in decline. And I think until he gets here and we see how he does, I'll have a full opinion out of him. But resume, I think this is about as good as the Revs could have done. Now, we do have another question here from Porter. When do we think Vatslik debuts for New England? He has an EU passport. He's well-traveled. I don't think it'll take a ton of time, but I still expect a few weeks before he gets in, because you got to think this signing wouldn't have happened unless Petrovic is sold, and the Petrovic sale happened last Monday night. According to The Athletic, there was an article by Tom Bogert about that deal being finalized on Monday night. So you got to think that it's going to take him a little bit to gather his things, get sold in New England, and get out on the field. So I'd expect at least 2 or 3 weeks, probably 3 weeks, I'll say.
No, yeah, I would definitely agree in the sense that we've just seen with transfers that it definitely can take a while. Obviously, someone with the EU passport and a well-traveled player might expedite it a little bit. But, you know, whether it be someone like Schrockele coming in, you know, I always remember that it took like almost like a month for FC Cincy's new DP to arrive after the deal being announced. So it definitely seems like it does take a little bit of time. So I wouldn't expect them for like to arrive this week, but probably 2 or 3 weeks you'd hope to see him. And it'll be interesting to see when he can finally get out on the field, because obviously I think Earl Edwards Jr., will get to it, you know, didn't have a terrible performance. But I think if you add someone like Vatslik, you know, maybe you can compete a little bit more, and especially with some of the issues New England are having, kind of mitigate those losses and turn them into draws, or possibly turn draws into wins. But yeah, overall, a great signing. Also, too, I believe it was noted in Seth's article, Seth McCumber, on the Blazing Musket, that he wouldn't have been a free agent if it wasn't for failing a medical with, I believe, AZ Alkmaar over in the Netherlands. So, you know, he definitely could have been playing. So people were still interested in him. It's not like no one was interested in him and didn't want to sign him. So the interest was there. So it's another good sign that you're getting a quality keeper who can definitely, you know, hopefully hold his own in MLS.
The good news is there was interest in him. The bad news is he failed his medical. That's okay. We don't have any injury problems here in New England.
The deal went through, so I don't think he failed this medical.
No. Yeah.
I don't like that attitude, Greg.
The Tesori Shradi trade also went through, so let's
You are right about that. I can't disagree there.
Let's talk Earl Edwards Jr. real quick. Vatslik signed a deal through the end of 2024 with a 2025 team option. In the meantime, Earl Edwards Jr., who is expected to be a free agent at the end of this season, has signed a contract extension with the Revs through 2024 with a team option for 2025. So similar lengths on that contract. He was previously set to be a free agent at the end of the season. And I will say we don't have salary numbers, but goalkeepers aren't very expensive, especially backup goalkeepers. He's making 125 this year. I would expect maybe he's getting a raise up to 150, maybe a little higher. But I don't think this is a deal that's going to break the bank. So the Revs maintain their stability. Sam, any thoughts on the Earl Edwards Jr. extension? And do you think this impacts Jacob Johnson-Jackson at all? Because I think I was expecting Jacob Johnson-Jackson to take over the number two role eventually, but it seems like they have more trust in Earl Edwards Jr. So what's your thought on the contract extension, and what do you think this means for Jacob Johnson-Jackson?
Yeah, I mean, for Jacob Johnson-Jackson, I think he might be feeling a little bit salty because he's a young keeper. The Revolution, I think, sowed some trust in him, drafting him in the first round of, I forget if it was 2020. I think it was 2021. That super draft. So they definitely were interested in him and kind of thought highly of him. So definitely might be a little bit salty there. But I think, like you mentioned, just the stability, having someone like Earl Edwards, I think, as a backup is very valuable. Obviously, you'd hope that Vasilik would be the number one, and I think that would be the case. But just having stability, kind of being able to mitigate injuries, which have, you know, definitely been coming aplenty in New England. So God forbid something did happen to Vasilik, you're able to have someone like Earl Edwards, a veteran, you know, is able to put in a good performance and perform well when called upon, is definitely very valuable. But I'll be interested to see what it means for Jacob Jackson. He's been putting in the work with Revs 2, performing quite well and was doing really well, especially, you know, until he had that injury, came back, still performing well. And now he's kind of sitting as a number two until Vasilik arrives. But it'll be interesting to see what it means for him, because I definitely think he would have been sniffing or, you know, hoping that he could compete for that starting that backup role with the first team.
And it's worth noting, too, right behind him, Max Weinstein, who I believe is at the University of Vermont, but he's an academy goalkeeper that I know the Revs are very high on as well. He's making some waves, too. So I think eventually he's going to push his way up to Revs, too. So Jacob Jackson, maybe he gets another year at Revs, too, but seems like he's a little bit blocked right now. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Revs extend his contract next year, exercise his option to keep him as the three, or if they go elsewhere for a third choice behind Earl Edwards Jr. And Vasilik. Gustavo Bo, let's talk about this. Still hurt. Last time we talked about him, he was killing Atlas. He really put the team on his back, and we have not seen him since. Tuesday, a few reporters go to practice. I believe it's DJ Bean says, "Well, I don't see Gustavo Bo out there." He asks Richie Williams, "Hey, what's up with Gustavo Bo? How's he doing?" And Richie Williams says, "Hell, he has a minor muscle injury." Okay. Next day, injury report comes out. Gustavo Bo is listed as questionable. Not out, as questionable. Okay, that's fine. And then Rhode Island Soccer News on Twitter, I don't know how he finds this out. Obviously, he has a very good source. He says, Gustavo Bo is in Argentina, and he is contemplating surgery. Now, Seth McComber also followed up on this and confirmed that he's in Argentina. Did not confirm the surgery part. But Richie Williams had availability on Thursday, and when presented the news that Bo is in Argentina, he says he expects Bo to be out 4 weeks. So, in 2 days, where there was no game, Gustavo Bo went from minor muscle injury to out for 4 weeks in an Argentina. Obviously, didn't play in this game. Sam, level of concern on Gustavo Bo?
It's almost like you don't have a level of concern because you just almost expect it, because he's someone who is prone to injury, and it's a lot of the reasons why, you know, definitely talking on this show and, you know, talking elsewhere, a lot of people are just like, I wouldn't bring him back as a DP because he's constantly hurt. Obviously, when he's on the field, he is able to perform, but he's just struggled to stay healthy. And it's another big blow. I think we saw in the Montreal game, having Giacomo Vironi as a lone striker isn't the best option. Richie Williams has even said as such that he doesn't perform, you know, it isn't, I guess, a suitable, you know, option. Oh, I'm wording this terribly. Basically, he says he doesn't perform his best when he's playing by himself, Vrioni. So it's definitely a major blow, and I think it'll be a challenge for Vrioni. Maybe you have to switch up the formation to get someone like Bobby Wood out there, but he struggled with injuries of his own. So I do think it's a pretty major blow, and as much magic as Carlos Hill can do, he is only one man, and if you're unable to provide that service into the box to someone like Rioni or Bobby Wood, you're really going to struggle. So when you have someone like Bo who can launch a shot from anywhere, really good at, you know, getting in behind and, you know, being able to, you know, break down that back line, you're going to feel his impact when he's not there. So I think it's a pretty big blow. I don't think it obviously kills their hopes on the season, but they'll have to, you know, realize that maybe this is the end of him in New England. Hopefully, you know, he is able to come back and, you know, finish out the season. But it's going to be really tough to justify bringing him back, especially as a DP.
I think the designated player stuff is out the window. Even if they add a fourth designated player spot in the offseason. I think the Revs, and this goes back to our prior conversation, they have the money that they need to start spending. And I think Estaba Bow, who is in and out of injury, I think he's just really not worth a $1.65 million or whatever a maximum or minimum designated player salary contract is anymore. So if he wants to stay, I think the Revs need to negotiate that contract down. And it's a little awkward because Heal and Bow obviously really enjoy playing with each other. So I think that might be his presence in the locker room might be missed a little bit, but the injuries are adding up. And him going to Argentina too, I would not be surprised if Gustavo Bow, well aware that his time in New England might be ending, he's going to have his doctors look at it. He's not just going to have the Revolution training staff look at this. He's going to have his guys look at this. Because you got to think, you know, if you're Gustavo Bow and you're going into free agency, you don't want to put it out all out there for the Revs and potentially do damage to, you know, yourself and hurt your value in a few months. How much money did Shohei Ohtani lose this week by pitching through a busted USL? I mean, hundreds of millions probably. So obviously Gustavo Bow, we're not talking hundreds of millions of dollars, but it's important for the player to be aware that, you know, when your contract's ending, you know, you don't want to play through injury for a team that is about to discard you anyway. So I'm not too worried about the Argentina stuff. I am worried about the injury. You played through it a few weeks ago, so I did not think this was going to be a big deal. It was described as a minor muscle injury on Tuesday. I imagine there is some element of truth to that, but I also imagine Bo is getting a second opinion, and I do wonder if I wonder how much he's. I don't want to question his motivations, but do you get what I'm saying? He's going to look out for Gustavo Bo. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I mean, of course, especially, you know, as a player, I think you should look out for yourself. Obviously, you want to be a team player, but you do have to look out for numero uno. But also, too, I will say, according to Richie Williams, he's getting treatments 2 to 3 times a day. But especially with him, you know, owning a club in Argentina, there's also the ties to Racing. You know, there it does seem like there could be a possible move back. Just in my opinion, I just don't see him taking a pay cut when he could, you know, just kind of live a nice life in Argentina. So we'll be interested to see how that plays out. But it's going to be a big loss. And I don't exactly know when we will see, you know, Gustavo Bow again, because obviously we've been told it's 4 weeks, but maybe that's 4 weeks to be in training, or maybe that's 4 weeks to complete treatment. You know, you never really know. So it could be quite some time until we see him again. And that's definitely going to affect the Revolution attack.
So we'll be interesting to see that. And I will say, as much as I have criticized Bruce Arena and the Revs for not being transparent on injuries, at least we have a timeline here on Gustavo Bow, 4 weeks. So we can not expect Gustavo Bow in the lineup for 4 weeks. You mentioned Frioni struggles as a lone striker. we'll be interested to see how the Revs work their way around this one, because it's they have some road games coming up. This is an important stretch for the Revs to get back on the right track. And oh boy, it's going to be a bumpy ride, I think. So let's talk Bruce Arena real fast. TSB 11 says, how much longer do we expect the Richie Williams experience to last? Bruce's games frequently felt tactics-free, but these last few games have been ridiculous. Yeah, Richie Williams, only 3 games, very small sample size. I think he's dealing with the hand he's dealt, and there's not a lot of right answers right now for this team. So, yeah, I kind of feel bad for Richie Williams being put in this spot. But there's not many levers he can pull. Any thoughts on Richie Williams before I get to this Bruce update?
No, I would just agree that he's really dealing with the hand that he's been dealt, and losing a DP, losing your starting goalkeeper, lose the best goalkeeper in MLS. It's really tough hands. So I think he's doing the best with what he currently has. And it's a short span of games, so I definitely think you need a larger sample size to kind of get an idea of him as a coach. And you're going to have plenty of opportunity to view him this week. You got 2 matches in this upcoming week, with a midweek match and then a Labor Day weekend match. So you're going to have to, you know, get a larger sample size, but definitely hold off a judgment on his coaching until, you know, maybe has, you know, at least a handful of games, 5 games under his belt.
There were some decisions that I was questioning, you know, Rivero, Varima, Buck on the wing, Polster right back, although I don't know who you put it right back. There's a number of things here that I kind of scratch my head at and say, I don't know about this one. But there's not a lot of options right now. And I think that goes to a roster construction question. We'll touch on that later. But anyway, let's talk about Bruce Arena. There's not much of an update. we talked about a little bit. Tara Sullivan did an article for the Boston Globe. There's really no news. It was really just an article saying that it's a, I don't think she used the word disgrace, but this investigation is ridiculous and there's no transparency and yada, yada, yada. In our article, there was a few bits of pieces of information that were interesting. This investigation is being done by a law firm, so it's not even an MLS investigation. MLS has hired a third-party law firm to do their investigation. And she said last week, I believe last Wednesday, this article came out, that all interviews were done. Players and everyone who needed to be interviewed have been interviewed. What's interesting is Carles Hill told media on Thursday that he wasn't interviewed. So not all the Revs players were interviewed. I still think that this was not something done at practice or in a game or something that a lot of players are aware of. And I believe Matt Polster also said it on Thursday that he doesn't know what's going on and he'll probably hear about it on Twitter. Didn't Polster say he'll hear about it from Twitter? Was that what he was talking about?
Exactly. I mean, it's technically X if we want to get technical about it. But yes, he did say I will probably hear about it on Twitter.
Hercules Gomez was talking to Tom Quillen on his podcast, and he says he has no idea, and he normally hears little bits and pieces. He's heard nothing. There are a lot of people that are going on and saying they are hearing nothing. So there isn't much of a update. The update is there is no update, and I don't know how much longer this is going to go for. All the interviews are done, so I imagine that at this stage the law firm is just coming to their conclusion and releasing a report. And truth be told, you know, I kind of expected this to go longer than most people, I think, because you look at the Taxi Fountas situation, there was more information that was publicly known on that. That went a month, I think. Deflategate, how long did that go? 2-3 months? People come in and interview and normally have to meet in person. It's not really done over Zoom or on the phone. So typically there's a scheduling process and the interview portion seems to take a long time. So I'm not surprised that this timeline has happened, but I am bracing myself for when a decision is made on Bruce Arena and certain details or the story in general is not told to the general public. Because I think there's a good chance that a lot of this information won't be disclosed when they do come to their conclusion. So that's really just where the Bruce Arena situation is. We still don't know when he's coming back, if at all, or if the conclusions will be released to the public. That's kind of it. Sam, anything you want to add?
The only thing I can add is, like you said, the only update is that there really is an update. I personally have reached out to that law firm, I believe Prosker and Rose, and haven't gotten anything back. Reached out on multiple occasions, not necessarily surprised. So it really seems like it's just going to be a waiting game. Obviously, I think we're all, you know, trying to see if we can figure out what the story is, but I mean, if you have Herc, you have Taylor Twellman, you know, he came out also too recently and said that interviews were concluded. So it seems like that portion of the process is concluded. So it almost seems like the shoe's going to drop soon. Obviously, no idea when, but it seems like we're inching closer and closer to when that will be. But it's quite weird and quite a weird situation that absolutely, you know, whether you're someone like Herc Gomez or, you know, Taylor Twellman, you know, one of those, you know, big names in, you know, I guess the, you know, American soccer landscape, and you know absolutely nothing. And then we have, you know, us beat reporters, we know absolutely nothing. It's quite a weird scenario to just have absolutely no information or any idea what could have happened.
And it's also worth noting too, and I think the most comparable thing that New England fans will remember is the Ime Udoka situation, where certain details kind of came out that there was some inappropriateness with a female colleague. The full story was never really released. At least I don't remember the full story, but I remember the Celtics saying at their press conference that female members of their organization received, you know, harassing tweets and social media engagement and stuff. So I think the details, I'm not as outraged as some people that there's no details on this, because I think if there is a victim, they want to make sure the details are very, very vague. So I'm curious to see, as I say, if this comes to light eventually. I would like to see it come to light eventually, especially if Bruce Arena is out of a job. So, you know, we can question the handling of this investigation all we want, Sam, but you know what we would never question? The quality and discounts we get at Golazo Kits. Their mission is to bring unique vintage jerseys to your home with a catalog of jerseys, jackets, scarves, and more from clubs and national teams from over 80 countries in the world. Sam, do you think they have Revolution merch?
I bet they have Revolution merch. Hey, Greg, do you think they have Paris Saint-Germain merch?
They sure do. Hey, do you think they have Nottingham Forest merch?
I guarantee you they do.
Actually, they don't. That was a trick question. They don't have any Nottingham, but they have Chelsea merch. So if you're a Petrovic fan, you can go get some Chelsea kits. So go check out GolassoKits.com today for their full selection. Make sure you follow them at GolassoKits on Twitter and on Instagram for updates on their new inventory. And when you find something you like, use promo code REVSRECAP to save 15% off your order. That is promo code REVSRECAP at GolassoKits.com for 15% off your order. Links and code are in the show notes. Sam, are you ready for listener questions?
I am pumped and ready to go.
You know, I need to, you're on Skype right now. I can see your reaction to things, and I think I need to do this more often.
Yes.
You roll your eyes at me so much in the first half of this,
No, I did not roll your eyes. I provided a great laugh track, and I could not believe the segue into that ad read.
Well, hey. Let's segue into listener questions right now. And let's start out with a doozy. Ice Corn says on Threads. Yes, we're on Threads. We're still on Threads. He says on Threads, can this team suck any worse? Sam?
I mean, I think they could. I mean, if you don't have Giacomo Verone, you don't have Dave Romney out there, you don't have Mark Anthony Kay out there, it could have been a lot worse. I mean, 1-0, not the worst game. You could have lost 4-0. So, I mean, it could always get worse. You know, especially I think Revolution fans are well aware that it can always get worse. But, yeah, it was a really rough game. Not a lot of, you know, chances created. Really struggling to provide service. And, you know, when you lose someone like DeJuan Jones and Brandon Bye, who are constantly, you know, crossing balls into the box and being able to attack opponents, if you lose those guys, you're going to feel those effects, and someone like Rioni isn't able to get any service, and you're really having to operate in the middle of the field. Obviously, that's kind of forced because of how Montreal was playing, but I do think losing those attacking options in the wing definitely played a factor, but definitely was not a good performance, but it can always get worse.
Well, hey, you know what can't get worse? My hosting abilities today, because we're supposed to go into our key takeaways. Brought to you by The Rebellion. Go to anyrebellion.org to learn more about them and their organization. And by the way, shout out to Corey, who welcomed a child into the world. So Corey Cloutier, president of The Rebellion, congratulations on the birth of your child. A beautiful baby boy whose name I forget. I'm going to guess Corey Jr. Definitely wasn't
Corey. I believe
Corey
it's Jr. Free C's, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I can't remember the exact name. I know Cloutier's in there. But besides that, yes, definitely congrats, Corey. I apologize that your child had to witness that Montreal game as their first experience as a Revolution fan.
Well, Sam, what is your key takeaway from this disaster of a game?
I definitely think that Giacomo Verone was put in a really tough spot. I talked about it before. Richard Williams flat out said that, you know, it isn't a great option, and he isn't able to perform at his best as a sole striker, and that's exactly what we saw him play as. I definitely think, you know, you have the Bow injury, you have Bobby Wood recovering from injury, and really the best part of his game wasn't anything to do with attacking. I think he was just doing a good job pressing opponents and kind of having a great work rate. But when you're a striker, your job is to score goals. And he just wasn't able to do that. I mean, the entire Revolution roster wasn't able to do that. I believe they only had 2 total shots, 0.04 expected goals. It was really rough in the final third. Richie Williams and Mark Anthony Kay really, you know, talked about how rough it was. And I definitely think that you can be kind of disappointed in Brioni's performance. I do think there's maybe one single thing. You can be like, hey, he did a good job here. But he was definitely dealt a really rough hand, and, you know, considering everything that was going on, I don't think he'd be too harsh, but it definitely was not a performance to remember from him. I believe he only had 8 touches, so it was a really rough night for him, but hopefully, whether it be pairing him with Bobby Wood or just, you know, overall him growing as a striker, you're able to, you know, see him put in a better performance, but 8 touches as a striker is pretty unacceptable.
8 touches over 72 minutes, so every 9 minutes he touched the ball once. Reminds me of the game, I believe it was Atlanta, where he did not touch the ball in 22 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
He has times where he vanishes, and I think part of that is the team around him, but also he struggles in a single striker set. And, you know, it's funny going from, you know, people giving me crap for trashing him and saying I needed to owe him an apology a month ago after the St. Louis game. We're back to Brioni struggling here. they need to figure this out. And you can't have a designated player not touch the ball throughout this game. So I know it's a road game. I know Bo is out, but you still have some decent options there. You still have Heal. You still have Harkes. You still have Buck. Maybe Chancalay will add another component to this offense, and maybe you can play Chancalay up top, and that unlocks something. But Vrione vanished, and that's a really, really tough look for a designated player. My key takeaway, I'll just keep it short and sweet. Ian Harkes, I really like what we're seeing. There's not a ton of positives we can take away from yesterday's game outside of Carlos Heal. Everyone knows how great Carlos Heal is. We don't need to talk about Carlos Heal. Almost scored from midfield. That would have been an amazing goal, but we're not even going to talk about it because he didn't score, and this game was terrible otherwise. But Ian Harkes, 88 minutes played, 90% pass accuracy. He was 36 for 40. One chance created, 51 touches, four passes into the final thirds, including 3 for 4 on long balls. I thought he played great. I thought Noel Buck played pretty decently. I don't think that's a good position for him on the wing. I think he needs to kind of play back and more centrally. But Ian Harkes... whenever Heal needed to move the ball to someone else, Harkes was able to retain possession. He was able to pass the ball safely. I think he's fitting in with this team very, very well, and he's secured a starting spot. In my mind, he's just a very, very good player for this team. And yesterday, when you have really no one able to carry the ball up the wings on the side in Polster and Spalding, when you are not able to really break lines, and when Carlos Heal is being swarmed and is not able to get into advanced positions, I think Ian Harkes yesterday, when they did have some momentum going forward, he seemed to be near the ball or with the ball. So I was impressed with Ian Harkes yesterday. I thought he did very well, and obviously the results didn't lead to anything, but I haven't seen a bad game from Ian Harkes yet, and I'm really encouraged by what we're seeing in him.
Yeah, definitely think really the midfield in general, I would say, had a pretty decent game. Mark Anthony Kay, I think, has been, you know, a good addition as well. Very strong defensively, and I think you saw that again last night. And also, too, I think you have to mention Dave Romney. I mean, media votes on a Defender of the Year award, and he's quite close to locking that up for me. He's just been an absolute great acquisition and you know, a great calming presence, you know, a great defender, you know, in that back line, whether it be with Henry Kessler, Andrew Farrell, Omar Gonzalez, he's always, you know, stepped up and been able to perform. So definitely shout out to those two guys too. But as you mentioned, Ian Harkes has really come in and immediately, you know, staked his claim for a starting spot. And I think it's going to be really tough, you know, to have him go back on the bench. I know after he kind of originally got here, was able to score, he had, you know, I believe a brief stint on the bench, maybe a game if two, but overall he's been a great addition, and I think we're definitely going to be seeing plenty of him for the rest of the season because he's performed well and he deserves it.
Hopefully he can stay healthy. I think Dave Romney winning Defender of the Year, I think that's a last man standing award, so thank goodness Dave Romney is still around. So all right, let's get into listener questions now. Mild Bill Davidson has a comment. Playing to lose was a disappointing game plan. Probably goes to the Richie Williams sentiment we heard earlier. And Thomas also says, I swear it looked like the Revs were a man down for the whole second half. Big Nation also says, first half held some promise, but Montreal made adjustments at the half that exposed our weaknesses, including Vrione on an island, our second and third choice backs, and Omar Gonzalez's pace. It was a tough watch, but not surprising given the circumstances. I was surprised at the trouble everyone had with the grass, lots of slipping. At one point, Rivera looked like he tore a 2-foot-long divot and hurt himself. I hate grass and Gillette just as much as anyone, or I hate turf and Gillette as much as anyone, but I was more nervous watching these guys last night than at home. Did you notice problems with the grass? It seemed like the ball was moving a little bit weird, but I thought maybe I was just seeing things. The grass didn't look that great to you in person?
It looked fine. It just seemed like they overwatered it because constantly players were, you know, kind of rubbing the ball down on throw-ins, and you saw the guy slipping. It just seemed like they overwatered it, and it was just way too slippery. So, yeah, definitely noticed that. And, you know, to the listeners' points, the second half, it just seemed like the Montreal was just bound to score that, you know, eventual goal. They had complete control. You know, they had absolute pressure in the final third, and it was just – Not if, it was when they were going to score. So maybe you need someone like Richie Williams to step in and, you know, be able to think of ways to, you know, stop, you know, that constant pressure. But definitely considering the players they had, it was a really tough challenge. And going on the road, I think you would hope to get a point. And it seemed like for a majority of the game, the Revolution might have, managed to escape Montreal of a point, and I think that would have been good. But to leave with no points to a team that's at the bottom of the Eastern Conference definitely is rough when you're in a Supporters' Shield race. And it'll be interesting to see how, the team adjusts to being under constant pressure. I think it's definitely a point where you're on the road, you're going to be under constant pressure. You just have to be able to deal with it in a better way. So definitely was that second half was rough. It just seemed like the Revolution couldn't create anything. Even when they had the ball, they weren't able to kind of maintain possession in the final third, and we saw Montreal be able to take advantage of it.
And they didn't create anything. I mean, statistically, they had 0.00 expected goals in the second half. They had zero shots. Both of their shots, both off target, came in the first half. Although I will say, Carlos Hill with the long range shot off of the crossbar, that nearly was a goal. And then the first shot they had in the opening minutes, Carlos Hill sets up Damian Rivera. Rivera makes a nice one-on-one move. A shot could be better. He misses wide of the mark on the far post. But that was probably the nicest play they made. In the entire game, they didn't come out of this game completely stunned. The first half seemed, it was boring. There weren't a ton of chances either way, but the Revs looked like they could win it. And then something happened in the second half, and I don't know exactly what it was. Montreal didn't make any subs in the second half at all. I don't know if they just loaded up the midfield, if the Revs had to just move the ball down the wings more, because I know they were very ineffective moving the ball up and down the wings. Something changed in the second half, and the Revs were completely stunned. So, I guess kudos to, I mean, when you're out coached by Hernan Losada, that's not a great sign for Richie Williams. But just a disastrous second half where they looked like they had zero energy, zero. I don't want to say they had zero effort, but I mean, they looked like a completely different team that couldn't do anything right.
No, I think they looked tired. They kind of looked exhausted. And obviously, I think immediately you point to that layoff. And after the match, both Williams and Marc-Anthony Kay were quick to say, hey, that's not an excuse. We can't use that as an excuse. But definitely, I think going so long without playing a match when you're in the middle of an MLS season where you're almost playing every week, that layoff can, add some rust, but you need to just be able to perform better. On the opposite end of the spectrum, you had plenty of rest and you just need to be able to show up and you need to be fit. So it definitely looked like they were feeling it in that second half.
It's disappointing that Ima comes on in the 61st minute. Chankele comes on, I believe, a little bit after that. You'd expect those guys to kind of come off and provide a spark, and none of that happened. So Traeger says it's clear Byron Jones are as important to our offense as Hill. I don't know if I'd go that far, but they are important. Trigger goes on to say, without them, we have no creativity and fewer threats to spread defenses, which allows them to focus more on Hill and Vrioni. Agree 100%. And so much of the Revs' offense is reliant on speed up and down the wings. Zero of that yesterday. I thought Spalding did okay, but Polster it right back. Yeesh, just not his spot. So Trigger says, how do the Revs solve this problem? And that's a really, really good question. I don't know if they can solve this problem with the way this team is currently set up. Sam, do you have any ideas?
I mean, the only possible solutions is you're gonna pray that someone like Thomas Chocolate can be that guy and be dynamic on the wing, kind of be someone like Dylan Barrero and just be able to go at defenders and being able to have that speed and skill to get by them. Also, I think the only other possible solution is just having DeJuan Jones come back. I think even just having him, and whether you probably will be Ryan Spalding on the opposite side. At least if you have DeJuan Jones, you have someone who's able to create those chances, who is able to provide service into the box with those crosses. But besides that, when you look at this roster, I don't necessarily think there is a solution. You have someone like Rioni who isn't really able to play well by himself. You have Bobby Wood who is able to play decently by himself. He's great at hold up play, but he struggled to stay, fit. And you have Rioni as a DP. You want him starting a majority of your games. So with how the roster is constructed, you're really just going to put a lot of pressure on someone like Jones to be able to provide that service from the outside, or someone like Chocolate to be able to create chances, whether it be for himself or for his teammates with his, speed and ability.
And if I wanted to get creative and really just throw stuff at the wall, I'd say, maybe you put a three-man back line, and then you have wingbacks and Spalding and like maybe Nacho Heel. But do we have three healthy center backs right now? I mean,
exactly.
The back line is such a mess. So, I mean, hopefully Farrell comes back, because you got to assume Farrell is the right back. We're going to have Farrell move back to right back where he used to play. But it's a real mess. That back line, they're really just playing whoever's available. And offensively, that's tough. I thought the defense held off pretty well. But yeah, offensively, there's really just a lack of flow. And hopefully Chancelet adds something. I know we got to see 30 minutes of him yesterday, and he didn't do a ton. Fine. We'll see how he does in the future. But I mean, we're talking about playing with two strikers, and we're going to have to convert Chancelet to a striker. We're going to have to play someone up top, and then, you know, but we don't have a right back. It's a complete mess, and they're really just playing whoever's available right now. So I think the solution is get healthy. DeJuan Jones needs to get healthy. Andrew Farrell needs to get healthy. That solves the problem, because right now, and Andy from Revs Nation, I'll read this comment too, like the grid I saw from Harks, but didn't have any major complaints about Mark Anthony Kay, but the Revs have to be kicking themselves for bringing in two more central midfielders and zero outside backs in the summer window. Polster shouldn't have to play right back. Not only did they not bring in a outside back in the summer window, they didn't bring one in the winter window. They drafted a winger / attacking midfielder in Joshua Bulma and tried converting him to right back. They didn't have any plan B behind Brandon Bye at right back. I guess it was move Polster to right back or move Farrell to right back, but there was no good plan B that if Brandon Bye got hurt, you had a like-for-like replacement. And now he's out for the season, and unless there's a free agency that's going to drop out of the sky that saved Huddersfield Town from relegation last year, you know, they're kind of screwed there. So terrible roster management from the Revs. I feel like we've talked about it leading up to the season, and we just assumed Brandon Bye would be there forever. And, you know, they're lacking the speed up and down the wings. And so now they got to work it up the middle. It's tough. It's tough.
No, I definitely agree. It's something that I think even at the end of the last season, you're like, the Revolution, that this is an area of concern in terms of overall depth. And you could even say that they did go out and sign someone, but apparently Ben Sweat is just never going to play, which I think, you know, was a rough indictment on him that you couldn't, you know, maybe move someone like Spalding to the right or even move Sweat to the right. And, you know, just in this patchwork situation, you have to have Polster come make his first ever start at right back for the Newland Revolution. I think his first time since, you know, playing with Rangers. So it was definitely rough to see that overall lack of depth and see that it was an issue before the season, and it just hasn't been able to get fixed. And it seems like moving forward, you're going to have to fix that, whether it be someone like DeJuan Jones possibly heading to Europe, or just because we've seen that players can get hurt. And just to think that Brandon Bye is just going to constantly slot in and be healthy, you can't trust that, because especially with the amount of games they're playing, whether it be Leeds Cup, US Open Cup, obviously if you're making it to the CONCACAF, you know, Champions League level, you're going to play a lot more games as well. So you need to have those backup plans. And it just seemed like the Revolution had plan A, and they didn't think to have plan B or C when it came to those, you know, outside back depth options.
Yeah, especially right back. I mean, every backup plan was move someone from where they're currently playing else. Move Farrell from the center to the right. Move DeJuan Jones from left to right. Move Polster from defensive mid to right back. And AJ De La Garza has moved to Charlotte, but I wonder, like, you know, do you put in a call to someone like him? Because you got to think there's Polster at right back really just should not have been that way. And, you know, there was a question here. I'll skip ahead of this question. Why can't the Revs stop the bleeding when they have a 30-minute stretch like they did in the last few minutes of the game? Slow down the play, move players around, anything. But nope, we just coasted and hoped Montreal was too inept to score. And I will give it to Montreal. That was a nice goal. But. Who could they bring off the bench that helps them defensively? You mentioned Ben Sweat. Ben Sweat has been, you know, he's Gabriel Somi levels of not coming into the game. Christian McCoon is available. We haven't seen him back from injury, and I guess he's your backup center back right now. Fine, he's okay. Tommy McNamara is coming off of a torn Achilles. He's a central midfielder, so you couldn't really play him anywhere. Esmir's on the bench. Jacob Jackson's on the bench. Nacho Heel's on the bench. Bobby Wood's on the bench. Sean Clay's on the bench. Ima Boateng. Your two two defensive subs you can make there are Ben Sweat and Christian McCoon. So late in the game, when you're trying to hold off for a point, you have zero people to come in and help hold the 0-0 draw or hold the lead. They have no one right now to come in and help rescue this back line when they need someone to come in and get fresh legs on. So very frustrating. And I think a lot of people saw this coming a mile away.
That definitely. And I mean, if it wasn't for injuries, don't you would have another option. It would have just been Omar Gonzalez. And obviously he's not an outside back. So yeah, it's really frustrating to kind of see that this was an issue and it just never really got, you know, filled. And you hope that it will get filled in the future because God forbid, you know, Jones or Bye has an absence. You're going to be in real trouble.
Evan Ryan says, go back to the last year's game at Montreal and tell me, did we learn anything from injuries? And yeah, lack of depth is hurting this team. It hurt this team last year and it's killing them this year. And injuries happen. It's bad luck. I get it. But there's 30 people on a roster and the Revs are filling out their roster. And it is crazy to me that the lack of depth at right back is something. I'll give him a pass for the lack of center back depth because, you know, Kessler and Farrell getting hurt, that's bad luck. I get it. But, you know, zero right back depth is, you know, something else. So anything you want to add on that? I'm ranting right now, Sam. Anything you want to add?
No, I would definitely say that, you know, just the overall lack of preparedness on the right back is definitely, you know, unacceptable. And obviously, you know, you didn't have Kessler for both of those games, but I think really the Revolution just needs to get healthy. They need to stay healthy, wrap them in bubble wrap, because if you continue to have injuries or, yeah, especially in the back line, you're going to be in, you know, real deep trouble.
John Pilkington says, what's your biggest concern coming out of the match? Mine, I forgot Vrioni was playing until he was subbed off. I think I got to go with the jumbled mess that is the back line. It's hurting defensively and offensively, and I don't see any solution in sight unless DeJuan Jones and Andrew Farrell come back healthy, or Henry Kessler. Hopefully Henry Kessler comes back too. And the crazy thing is Omar Gonzalez is holding his own. We'll talk about Omar in a second. So it could be a lot worse. It could be a lot worse. But my concern is just the mess in the back. Sam, do you have any other concerns coming out of this match?
Yeah, like you said, it can always it can always be worse. But just a lack of overall chance creation. I think you just have to be able to, you know, break down to Montreal. You have a matchup against Red Bulls. You're going to have to try and break them down with their press. So you have to be able to create chances. And I think, you know, Carlos Hill obviously was able to, you know, make some sort of magic, and you almost, you know, had that chip. But besides that, there was no chances like we've gone about. So, you know, even when you're without someone like Gustavo Bo, even, you know, kind of when, you know, the your cards are stacked against you, you have to be able to at least create chances. So definitely need to see more in the final third. And without Gustavo Bo and, you know, Chocolat kind of looking to find himself and not having a DeJuan Jones, for instance, I think it could be really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Real OT Daddy says, this was nearly unwatchable tonight, and not just because Apple couldn't make the technology work. No offensive urgency, no chemistry, but then again, this 11 have never played together before this. Please stop passing in a phone booth on the sidelines, and please recognize Romney as the most underrated passer in Major League Soccer. We need to get healthy. We need to get healthy. Yep.
We need to get healthy.
Very, very good comment. Paulo S. Well, and on this one, we looked like a bit of a wounded animal. We almost pulled out the draw, though. Not impressed with Tomas Jankele, but he's still figuring things out, obviously. Was hoping Wood and Vrioni could play together. Didn't pan out. Complete right turn here at the end here. Three new players besides the comment. But what did you think of Omar Gonzalez, Damian Rivera, and Earl Edwards Jr.? I mentioned this. I didn't mind Omar Gonzalez yesterday. I thought he played good. He did have one chance in the 73rd minute where there was a low cross through the box that he failed to clear. It was kind of at his feet, and he kind of made a mess of it. And I believe it led to a long shot that went over the bar. Outside of that, that was my only blemish on Omar Gonzalez. I think he's been doing fine. I still don't love him as a starter, especially in a four-back set. I think he's better in a five-man set. But I think he's fine. I thought he was fine, and he's doing the job. And I see some people already saying he might be better than Andrew Farrell. That might be a step too far for me, but I thought Omar Gonzalez was fine. Damian Rivera vanished after that fifth-minute chance. Yeah, he's a backup. I would have rather seen Ime out there, and I can't imagine he's going to get many more chances when people get healthy, when Chanclay finds his way in the lineup more. Earl Edwards Jr., thought he was fine. Could have been better, could have been worse. He was what I expected him to do. I think he's a solid backup keeper, and that's about it. Sam, thoughts on Omar, Rivera, and Edwards?
Yeah, so definitely, you know, agree. I think Omar had a pretty good performance. I think you can definitely see, obviously, you know, he is up there. He is a veteran. So just the kind of lack of pace and, you know, going up against some younger guys, you can notice that. But overall, I thought he had a valiant performance, especially, you know, stepping in alongside Dave Romney when he hasn't gotten a lot of playing time. I think it was last minutes were the most recent match against Atlanta, and I think it was like May or possibly like June since he got a start. So it's been quite some time, but you know, he was able to step in and do the job. In terms of Damian, like you said, he kind of vanished after that, you know, chance, that shot that he had. And obviously, I think there's still something there, but kind of the clock is beginning to tick compared to someone like Justin Giannis, for example. I think this is kind of a time where you need to see if he's really MLS material or someone who can, you know, be a viable option off the bench, you know, whether it be possibly someone like Rivera, maybe being better suited to USL Championship. Maybe that's the case, but I do think there's still some time to see what he has, but he does need to start kind of performing better, putting in more consistent performances. We've seen that he's been able to find the back of the net and make those plays. So just need to see it on a more consistent basis. Recognize it is tough, you know, coming off the bench, but he did have, you know, the full start against Montreal. And I was kind of a little bit shocked to see it. I thought maybe we see someone like Asmir Bakhtiarovic make it, you know, definitely coming off, you know, he's been able to score his first goal. He's been looking well, and he's just someone who, you know, is able to go at defenders, you know, great, I would say, you know, pretty good on the ball, and just, you know, can kind of create something and do something. And I think the Revs were kind of lacking that. I don't know if you do play him, if he makes a whole lot of a difference, but definitely would have enjoyed seeing him compared to Rivera. And again, with Earl, I think he did everything could really ask of him. I'm not really going to blame him on that goal. I think it was just overall, you know, the defense, the back line kind of crumbled and kind of reached its breaking point. So I think he's done a good job, and for however long he's going to be playing until Vasily comes in, I think, you know, he's someone you can trust there. And especially when Jorge was out, he stepped in and did a good job. So I don't think he'll be a liability. I think, you know, he'll just be able to be a solid goalkeeper. He might not make some of the saves that Petrovic will make, but I think that's what you have to expect when you're losing the best keeper in MLS. So, you know, I wouldn't, especially for, you know, Earl Edwards Jr. and Omar, they weren't amazing performances, but I definitely think they did their job, but definitely want to see more from someone like Damian Rivera.
Yep, agreed 100%. Sam, that does it for listener questions. Anything else on your mind here today before we go on, and where can people find your work?
Greg, I just want to say really appreciate you having me on. Who knows, maybe we'll find out Bruce Arena information in the next 48 to 72 hours. You know, it's just a fun time covering that story.
Sam,
but yeah, really,
Sam, yes. I have a question. Would you be shocked if we don't hear about Bruce Arena in the next 48 to 72 hours?
People are saying I might be shocked. But yeah, appreciate you having me on. Definitely make sure to check out everything we're doing over at the Blazing Musket, whether it be Revs 2, shout out to Nate covering Hartford in what is a really bad season for them. So hey, could be worse, Revs fans. But yeah, definitely check us out. Check us out on Twitter at Blazing Musket. Check out our YouTube channel where you've been able to post you know, the press conferences for the Revs, and also getting some Hartford and Vermont Green stuff up there. And you can find us on Threads as well, too. So definitely check us out there. But thank you all for your support. And shout out to Greg for writing that Earl Edwards Jr. news. Really appreciate it, Greg. Thank you very much. Greg Johnstone, writer and podcaster, jack of all trades. But again, Greg, thank you so much for having me on. Have an absolute blast whenever I'm with you.
Yeah, it was a beautiful 3-paragraph article that was basically a rewritten news release. I do contribute to the Blazing Musket occasionally. And also, by the way, if you are not betting against Hartford Athletic every single week, I don't know where you've been. That is a real dumpster fire over there in USL. God bless Nate for having to sit through that entire season And our thoughts are with the people of Connecticut right now, because that is that is bad. But you definitely know every single week I am going to Bet Online, promo code BLEAV, BLEAV, and using my 50% welcome bonus on my first deposit on gambling against Hartford Athletic. One more plug there. By the way, a few more plugs here I want to get in. U.S. amputee soccer team still raising money to go to Poland for their tournament that is going to be in October. If you have not checked that out, please go check out their website right now, U.S. amputee soccer team, as they continue fundraising. Also, the Rebellion have a foot golf tournament going on. It's going to be in Norfolk, Massachusetts on October 7th. Limited spots remaining. So go check out anyrebellion.org to learn more about their foot golf tournament. And I think that is it. This
Greg.
45-minute podcast did go over an hour. It's an hour 10. Good. That's a Greg Johnstone classic where I said it was 45 minutes and goes an hour 10. What up, Sam?
I just have to add, do we know if Connecticut is in New England? Because I don't know if you saw that Rev social media video, but it doesn't seem like the Revolution players have a grasp on geography.
There are so many references we've made to social media that there are people that listen to this that do not go on social media, and they have no idea exactly what we're talking about. Season ticket reps and being shocked in 48 to 72 hours. There was a video for those people. I'll explain this one. There was a video where they showed Revolution players trying to name the states in New England. And look, Jesus Christ. Like, if you've I don't want to name names. I don't want to name names. If you were born in Massachusetts, if you've lived in New England more than 5 years, you've played in Foxborough, Massachusetts, you got to know Rhode Island. I'm not naming names, but anyone who saw that video, there was one person in particular. How long have you been here and you don't know what Rhode Island is? Come on. I will say, Dave Romney's been here for like 5 minutes and he like stepped up confidently, named all the states, mixed up Vermont, New Hampshire, but he stood up confidently. Dave Romney is the best player in those videos because he goes in, no messing around, just dead serious, just bang, 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 bang. Everyone else thinks about it. Dave Romney, no fear, goes in. I love Dave Romney on and off the field. Great job. So even I'll give him a pass for that one. Dave Romney, you're good with us.
I appreciated all the players who left Connecticut out of New England or couldn't name Connecticut. I thought that was pretty cool.
They all got Maine too. So, and also, I think Tommy McNamara was like one of two people that got it. So it's just great to see that Ivy League education working out for him. So
Tommy Mac's a genius.
Shout out Tommy Mac. Shout out Brown University. You can follow us on Twitter at Revolution Recap. Please make sure you're also following us on Instagram, on Threads, and on Facebook. And of course, be sure to follow our friends at the Blazing Musket, as Sam talked about. Go subscribe to their Substack and receive every piece of news in your email inbox. And who knows, maybe you'll get to see an article of mine. Also, be sure to follow our friends at The Rebellion, at The Rebellion on Twitter, and go to anyrebellion.org to learn more about their organization and their foot golf tournament in October. Go check out our sponsor, Galasso Kits, and use promo code REVSRECAP for 15% off your order. And check out Bet Online, our presenting sponsor. This episode has been presented to you by Bet Online. Go to betonline.ag and get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Promo code BLEAV, BLEAV. Also, please make sure you're subscribed to iTunes or wherever you're listening, and please rate and review us 5 stars. It helps people looking for Revolution content find us. So please, if you have not rated and review us on iTunes and on Spotify, go do that now. We will be back midweek game, New York Red Bulls, Wednesday. We have a quick turnaround. We got to do this all again, Wednesday. Until then, thank you everyone for listening. Go Revs.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.